A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's been thinking about Kaizen, the Japanese philosophy of continuous improvement that Toyota made famous. The question is, companies talk about it constantly. Consultants sell it, but what does it actually look like on a day-to-day basis? Not the PowerPoint version, not the mission statement on the wall, but what people actually do on a Tuesday morning.
This is one of those topics where the gap between what gets said in keynote speeches and what happens on the factory floor is basically a canyon. And I think the best place to start is with the thing most people get wrong about Kaizen. They think it's a suggestion box.
The glockenspiel of corporate approachability.
You put a wooden box on the wall, employees drop in ideas, management ignores them, everyone feels worse. That is not Kaizen, that's theater. Real Kaizen is structured, it's daily, and it's everyone's job, not something you do when you have a spare 15 minutes.
Walk me through what that structure actually is. If I'm a line worker at a Toyota plant, or anywhere that takes this seriously, what hits me first thing in the morning?
You're going to start with a stand-up meeting, 5 to 10 minutes max, literally standing up so nobody gets comfortable and rambles. Your team lead reviews yesterday's numbers, defects, downtime, anything that deviated from standard. Then each person flags one issue they noticed. Not solutions yet, just problems. And this is the first counterintuitive thing about Kaizen. It's problem-obsessed, not solution-obsessed. Most workplaces are terrible at even seeing their own problems. People work around broken processes so habitually they stop noticing the workaround. So step one is training everyone to spot and name what's wrong.
That feels like it would be genuinely uncomfortable for a lot of organizations. Most corporate cultures punish people for pointing out problems.
That's exactly why most Kaizen implementations fail. You can't bolt the tools onto a culture that punishes honesty. Taichi Ono, the Toyota engineer who basically invented the Toyota production system, used to make managers stand in a chalk circle on the factory floor for hours, sometimes entire shifts, just watching. Not allowed to leave, not allowed to intervene. The goal was to force them to actually see the work.
The chalk circle of middle management enlightenment.
Ono believed you couldn't improve a process you hadn't truly observed, and most managers then and now have never actually watched their own operations for an uninterrupted hour. They walk through, they nod, they go back to their spreadsheets.
The stand-up meeting surfaces problems. What happens next?
This is where the daily practice gets concrete. After the morning huddle, each worker follows standardized work, and this is another thing people misunderstand. They hear standardized work and think robotic conformity. But in Kaizen, the standard isn't a ceiling, it's a floor. It's the current best-known way to do something, documented so clearly that any deviation is visible.
The standard exists to be broken.
To be improved. The standard is what you improve from. If there's no standard, you can't tell if a change is an improvement or just noise. Every workstation has a standardized work chart, step by step, with cycle times, with quality checks built in. Workers follow it precisely, but also flag when it's not working.
They suggest a change, and a committee reviews it 6 months later?
No, and this is the radical part. On a properly run Kaizen floor, the worker has the authority to stop the line. The andon cord, the literal pull cord above the workstation, triggers a light and a sound. The team lead comes over immediately. If the problem can't be solved in the tack time, the pace of production, the line stops.
That's terrifying from a management perspective. You're giving a line worker the power to halt thousands of dollars a minute in production.
Toyota did exactly that, deliberately, starting in the 1950s. The logic is that stopping the line to fix a problem right now is cheaper than shipping defects and dealing with a recall. It also sends a message, quality is everyone's responsibility, not the inspection department's. And when the line stops, the response isn't punishment, it's problem solving. The team lead and the worker diagnose together. If they fix it, great. If they can't, it gets escalated and the line stays down until it's resolved.
I'm trying to imagine that in the non-manufacturing context. If I'm running a software team and a developer pulls the Andon cord, stops the deployment pipeline because something looks off, does the same psychology hold?
It can, but you have to adapt the mechanics. Spotify, for example, has something they call squad health checks. It's not called Kaizen, but it's the same DNA. Teams do regular retrospectives where they rate themselves on things like we ship quickly or our tech debt is manageable. The key is that it's not a performance review, it's a diagnostic. The team looks at its own processes and says, this is where we're slow, this is where we're confused.
We have fun. As a Kaizen metric is the most Swedish thing I've ever heard.
It's actually smart though. Employee engagement isn't a perk. It's a leading indicator of process health. Bored, frustrated people don't improve processes. They check out. And Kaizen depends on people being engaged enough to notice and care about small inefficiencies.
Let's go back to the factory floor. You mentioned standardized work charts and the Andon cord. What else is part of the daily rhythm?
The big one is the end of shift reflection. In a mature Kaizen culture, the last 10 or 15 minutes of every shift is dedicated to what Toyota calls hanze, usually translated as reflection, but it's deeper than that. It's honest self-assessment, often with an edge of dissatisfaction. What went wrong today? What did we learn? What will we try differently tomorrow?
It's not a victory lap.
Even on a good day, the question is, what stopped this from being a perfect day? And the answers are supposed to be brutally specific. Not communication was poor. That's useless. More like the torque wrench at station 4 was out of calibration and nobody noticed until the third unit, so we had to rework 2 units and lost 14 minutes.
That level of specificity requires a culture where people aren't afraid to say, I messed up, or my station had a problem.
That's the entire ballgame. Every Kaizen tool, the stand-ups, the Andon cord, the standardized work, the hanze reflection, it all depends on psychological safety. If workers fear retaliation for admitting mistakes, Kaizen becomes what the Japanese call Kaizen of the mouth. Going through the motions, saying the right things, filing the right forms, and nothing actually improves.
Kaizen of the mouth. Covering the covers.
And you see this in Western companies that adopt the rituals without the underlying values. They install suggestion boxes and call them Kaizen boards. They do morning stand-ups where nobody says anything real. They track number of improvements submitted as a metric, which is like tracking number of emails sent. You're measuring activity, not outcomes.
The metric becomes the target, and the target becomes the theater.
Goodhart's law in action. When a measure becomes a target, it ceases to be a good measure. Kaizen is particularly vulnerable to this because the real outcomes, fewer defects, less downtime, faster throughput, can take months to shift. So impatient managers start counting improvement suggestions instead, and suddenly everyone submitting rearrange the pins to hit quota.
What separates a company that's actually doing this well from one that's just performing it? If you walked into a factory or an office tomorrow, what would tell you in the first 5 minutes whether the Kaizen is real?
I'd look for 3 things. First, visual management. Is there a board, physical or digital, that shows the team's actual performance against targets, updated today, not last week? Are there red magnets or sticky notes flagging current problems? In a real Kaizen environment, you can walk up to any team's board and understand within 30 seconds what they're working on, what's broken, and what they're doing about it.
The board is the team's nervous system.
Second, can a frontline worker explain the current improvement experiment? Not we're doing Kaizen in the abstract, but we're testing whether moving the parts bin 6 inches to the left reduces reach time by 0.3 seconds. If the person doing the work can't tell you what they're currently trying to improve, Kaizen is just wallpaper.
The third thing?
How managers react to bad news. If a team lead hears about a defect and their first response is, whose fault is this? Kaizen is dead. If their first response is, show me what happened, let's understand the process failure. Kaizen is alive. It takes about 90 seconds of observing a problem conversation to know which culture you're in.
That 90-second test is devastating. I can think of at least 3 places I've worked where the first question was always, who?
Most organizations are like that. And it's not because the managers are bad people. It's because they're measured and rewarded for outputs, not for process health. If your bonus depends on hitting this month's production target, and someone wants to stop the line to investigate a subtle quality issue, the incentive structure is screaming at you to keep the line moving.
Which brings us to the uncomfortable truth. Kaizen requires management to accept short-term pain for long-term gain in systems optimized for quarterly earnings.
And this is why Toyota is the canonical example, but also somewhat misleading. Toyota spent decades building this culture under private ownership, with patient capital, in a post-war Japanese economy where lifetime employment was the norm. Workers weren't afraid that improving efficiency would eliminate their jobs. Toyota explicitly guaranteed that no worker would be laid off due to productivity improvements. That promise is the foundation of everything else.
Without that guarantee, you're asking people to enthusiastically eliminate their own positions.
And in most Western implementations, that tension is never resolved. Management says, "We want your improvement ideas," while simultaneously conducting layoffs. Workers are not stupid, they notice the contradiction. So they protect themselves by keeping their best ideas to themselves, or by suggesting improvements that make their own work easier without actually increasing productivity.
That's not Kaizen. That's rational self-preservation.
And it points to something deeper about Kaizen that gets lost in the business book version. The philosophy isn't really about tools and techniques, it's a social contract. The company says, your job is secure, your ideas matter, and you have real authority over your work. The worker says, in return, I will constantly work to make this place better. Take away either side of that bargain and the whole thing collapses.
If a company isn't willing to make employment guarantees, is Kaizen just not for them? Or is there a modified version that works?
I think you can practice the methods without the full Toyota social contract, but you have to be honest about the limits. A software company with high turnover can still do effective retrospectives and continuous improvement. They just can't expect the same depth of engagement you'd get from a workforce that expects to be there for 30 years. Partial Kaizen is still better than no Kaizen, as long as you don't pretend it's the full thing.
The decaf Kaizen
still wakes you up a little, won't give you the full jolt.
Let's talk about some of the specific tools. You mentioned Kaizen events earlier, the blitzes. How do those fit into the daily rhythm?
A Kaizen event is typically a 3 to 5 day focused improvement sprint. You pull a cross-functional team, operators, engineers, maybe a supplier or a customer, and you give them one specific problem to solve. The rule is, by Friday at 5 p.m., the improvement is implemented. Not planned, not recommended, not presented to a steering committee, implemented.
That's aggressive.
It's supposed to be. The time pressure forces people to abandon analysis paralysis. A typical agenda, Monday is training and defining the current state, Tuesday is analyzing root causes, Wednesday is designing the new process, Thursday is implementing and testing, Friday is standardizing and presenting results.
This is on top of people's regular work.
During the event, this is their regular work. They're pulled off normal duties. The company is essentially investing 40 person days into solving one problem in 1 week. It's expensive. Which is why you don't do Kaizen events for trivial issues. You save them for problems where the payoff is clearly worth the investment.
What's an example of a problem that would justify that?
Classic example. A factory has a bottleneck at a particular machine. Orders are backing up. Delivery time's slipping. You pull a team. They spend the week observing the machine, measuring cycle times, interviewing operators. They discover the machine spends 40% of its time waiting for materials from the previous station. The fix isn't a faster machine, it's rearranging the workflow so materials arrive just in time. By Friday, the new layout is in place, the bottleneck is reduced, and the standard is updated.
The daily practices we talked about, the stand-ups, the Andon cord, the Hansei, those are what catch the smaller problems before they become Kaizen event-sized problems.
The daily practices are the immune system. Kaizen events are the surgery. If your immune system is working, you need surgery less often.
That's a good frame. So, let me ask about something that's been in the back of my mind. Kaizen emerged from post-war Japanese manufacturing. It's deeply tied to a specific culture, a specific economic moment, specific labor relations. How well does it actually travel?
The track record is mixed. American automakers in the 1980s and 90s would send delegations to Toyota, come back with the tools, the Andon cords, the Kanban cards, the standardized work charts, and implement them without the culture. It was like buying a samurai sword and expecting to become a samurai.
The costume approach to management consulting.
It mostly failed. There's a famous story about GM's Nummy plant, the joint venture with Toyota in Fremont, California, starting in 1984. GM sent managers to observe. They saw the Andon cord. They installed Andon cords in their other plants. Workers pulled them. Managers yelled at them for stopping production. The cords became decorations.
Of course they did. Why would anyone pull a cord that gets them yelled at?
Here's what's interesting. The NEMI plant itself, where Toyota was actually running the show, was wildly successful. It took the same workforce that had been GM's worst plant, with the highest absenteeism and the most grievances, and turned it into one of the best plants in North America. Same union, same workers, completely different results.
It's not that the American workers couldn't do Kaizen. It's that management couldn't.
That's the uncomfortable conclusion. And it's not just an American problem. There are Japanese companies that do Kaizen badly, and non-Japanese companies that do it well. The cultural variable that matters isn't nationality. It's whether management is willing to share authority and information with frontline workers.
Which brings us to whether any of this applies to knowledge work. Software teams, marketing departments, legal firms. Is Kaizen translatable to work that isn't repetitive and physical?
Parts of it, yes. The core loop, standardize, observe, improve, standardize again, applies to any repeatable process. Software teams do this with continuous integration and deployment pipelines. They standardize the build process, they measure it, they improve it. The Toyota concept of Jidoka, automation with a human touch, where machines detect problems and alert humans. That's basically what automated testing and monitoring does in software.
A lot of knowledge work isn't repetitive. Writing a legal brief isn't like assembling a door panel.
No, and this is where people overreach with Kaizen and make themselves miserable. Not every type of work benefits from process standardization. Creative work, strategic thinking, relationship building, those need slack and variation. The mistake is trying to Kaizen everything. The wisdom is knowing which parts of your work are processes and which parts are judgment.
The Kaizen of writing a novel would be a special kind of hell.
Although, interestingly, many writers do have routines they continuously refine. Haruki Murakami talks about his writing routine. Wake at 4 a.m., write for 5 to 6 hours, run or swim in the afternoon, in bed by 9 p.m. He's been doing it for decades. Is that Kaizen? In a way, yes. He's standardized his process so the creative work can happen within a stable container. But the creative work itself isn't standardized.
The container can be Kaizened, even if the contents can't.
That's a very good way to put it. And I think that's the right level of ambition for most knowledge work organizations. Improve the meetings, improve the communication rhythms, improve the onboarding process, improve the deployment pipeline. Don't try to Kaizen the brainstorming session.
Let me push on something. You said earlier that Kaizen is problem-obsessed, not solution-obsessed. But in my experience, a lot of corporate continuous improvement programs are exactly the opposite. They're solution-obsessed. Someone reads a book about agile or lean, and suddenly everyone has to do stand-ups and use a particular framework, regardless of what problems they actually have.
That's the consultant industrial complex at work. Frameworks are easier to sell than wisdom. Buy our 5-step Kaizen implementation program is a product. Build a culture where people honestly confront problems and experiment with solutions is not a product. It's hard work that takes years.
The 5-step program is the MVP of organizational change theater.
It's appealing because it gives executives something to announce. We're implementing Kaizen sounds proactive. We're going to spend the next decade slowly building trust and problem-solving capability. Does not make for a good town hall.
If a listener is in a position to actually influence how their organization approaches this, maybe they're a team lead or a middle manager, what's the smallest thing they could do tomorrow that would be Kaizen-like, not theater?
Start a problem log. Just a shared document. Could be a whiteboard, could be a Google Doc, where the team lists problems as they encounter them. Not solutions, not blame, just here's something that went wrong or was harder than it should have been. Review it at the end of the week. Pick one problem and ask, what's the root cause? Don't even try to fix it yet, just understand it.
That's almost disappointingly simple.
And most teams won't sustain it past 3 weeks, because naming problems without immediately jumping to solutions feels unnatural and vaguely unproductive. But if you can build that muscle, the ability to sit with a problem and understand it before solving it, you've built the foundation of Kaizen. Everything else is elaboration.
The problem log as gateway drug.
The second thing I'd suggest, if the first thing sticks, at your next team meeting, ask what's one thing that slowed us down this week that we've just accepted as normal. You'll be amazed what surfaces. People have workarounds they've been using for years that they've never mentioned because nobody asked.
There's something almost therapeutic about that. The organization repressing its inefficiencies until someone creates space to name them.
Organizations have a subconscious just like people do. The stuff nobody talks about, the processes everyone knows are broken but works around, the meetings everyone knows are useless but attends anyway. Kaizen, at its best, is a way of making the organizational subconscious conscious.
Like therapy, it only works if people feel safe enough to be honest.
Which is why psychological safety is the prerequisite for everything we've talked about. Without it, Kaizen is just another set of empty rituals. With it, it's transformative.
The Japanese manufacturing philosophy that revolutionized global industry is, at bottom, a practice of getting people to tell the truth about what's not working.
I'd argue that's exactly what it is. The tools are just scaffolding for honesty.
That's either profound or reductive, and I can't decide which.
It can be both. Most profound things are.
Let's talk about the flip side. What are the pathologies of Kaizen done badly? We touched on the suggestion box theater and the metric gaming. What else goes wrong?
One common pathology is what the Japanese call Kaizen fatigue, when the pace of change becomes exhausting. If you're constantly tweaking processes, constantly running improvement events, constantly being asked, what can we do better? Eventually, people burn out. Improvement becomes the new grind.
Even continuous improvement needs to be improved continuously. The infinite recursion problem.
There's actually a concept for this in lean thinking called Kaizen of Kaizen, improving the improvement process itself, making it less burdensome, more targeted, more sustainable. Mature organizations learn that not everything needs to be improved all the time. Some things are good enough. The art is knowing what's worth improving and what's worth leaving alone.
The serenity prayer of operations management.
Grant me the serenity to accept the processes I cannot improve, the courage to improve the processes I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
I walked right into that.
You absolutely did.
Another pathology, I'd imagine. Kaizen used as a pretext for never making big changes. We don't need to re-architect the system, we'll just continuously improve the existing one. And meanwhile, the existing one is fundamentally broken.
Kaizen is incremental by design, but some problems aren't incremental. If your business model is obsolete, no amount of process improvement will save you. Kaizen optimizes within a paradigm. It doesn't change paradigms. That's a different thing entirely, what the management literature calls kaikaku, radical transformation.
That's a new one for me.
It means reform or revolution. The idea is that organizations need both. Kaizen for continuous incremental improvement within the current system, and Kaikaku for periodic radical reinvention. Toyota does both. They continuously improved their manufacturing processes, but they also made a radical bet on hybrid vehicles with the Prius, and later on hydrogen fuel cells. That's not Kaizen, that's Kaikaku.
The mature organization has both muscles, the daily discipline of small improvements, and the occasional willingness to blow things up and start over.
Knowing which muscle to use when is basically the entire job of leadership.
I want to come back to something you mentioned earlier about Toyota's guarantee that productivity improvements wouldn't lead to layoffs. That's a very specific historical commitment tied to Japan's post-war labor relations. Is there any equivalent in the modern economy, or is Kaizen in a gig economy world just fundamentally constrained?
I think it's constrained. The gig economy is structurally opposed to Kaizen because Kaizen requires investment in people. If your business model treats workers as interchangeable and disposable, you're not going to get the kind of deep process knowledge and engagement that Kaizen depends on. The worker who's been doing the same job for 15 years and knows every quirk of the equipment, that's the person who can tell you exactly what needs to improve. If that person is a temp, he'll be gone in 6 months. You've lost that knowledge before it can accumulate.
There's a kind of irony here. The companies that most loudly proclaim they're doing Kaizen are often the ones with the highest turnover and the least job security, the exact conditions that make Kaizen impossible.
There's a whole genre of management literature that's basically, we did Kaizen and it didn't work. And when you dig into the case studies, you find they implemented the tools while simultaneously breaking the social contract. They wanted the benefits without the costs.
The management equivalent of wanting to lose weight without diet or exercise.
About as effective.
Let's shift gears slightly. You mentioned Toyota's practice of making managers stand in a chalk circle and observe. That's a very physical, manufacturing-specific practice. Is there an equivalent for knowledge work? How do you go to the Gemba? That's the term, right? When the work is happening in people's heads and on their screens?
Gemba means the real place, where value is actually created. In a factory, that's the production floor. In a hospital, it's the patient's bedside. In software, it's the work is distributed, often asynchronous, much of it invisible. But the principle translates. You go where the work happens, and you watch it happen, without interfering. In software, that might mean sitting with a developer while they debug something, or watching a user try to navigate your product, or shadowing a customer support call.
The chalk circle becomes a screen share session.
And the discipline is the same. Don't interrupt, don't suggest, don't solve. Just watch and learn. Most managers in knowledge work have never watched an employee do their actual job for an uninterrupted hour. They see output, the code, the report, the presentation, but they don't see the process that produced it. All the friction, all the workarounds, all the moments of confusion, invisible.
When you do watch, what tends to surface?
Usually, how much time is lost to things that aren't the actual work. Waiting for approvals, searching for information, context, switching between tools, recovering from interruptions. There was a study a few years back that found knowledge workers switch contexts every 3 minutes on average, and it takes about 23 minutes to fully refocus after an interruption. The workday is full of these tiny fractures that add up to enormous productivity losses.
The Gemba walk reveals that the open plan office is the enemy of Kaizen.
In many cases, yes. The physical environment is a process variable. If your floor plan makes deep work impossible, all the stand-up meetings and retrospectives in the world won't fix that. You're improving around a fundamentally broken constraint.
This is making me think about Kaizen in my own life. I have processes. The way I prepare for the show, the way I take notes, the way I manage my time. I've never thought about applying Kaizen to any of it.
Personal Kaizen is absolutely a thing. And it's simpler than organizational Kaizen because you don't have to negotiate with anyone else's incentives or fears. You just pick something you do repeatedly, standardize it, measure it, and improve it. Mornings are a classic starting point. Most people's mornings are chaotic and reactive. A Kaizen approach would be, document exactly what you do now, identify the biggest pain point, try one change for a week, measure whether it helped, standardize or discard.
I feel personally attacked by how chaotic my mornings are.
I've seen your mornings. You wake up, stare at a leaf for 15 minutes, and then wonder why you're running late.
The leaf staring is non-negotiable. It's ancestral.
Is this one of your Mongolian sloth traditions?
Ancient leaf medicine requires morning contemplation of breakfast before consuming it.
You're aware that sloths aren't actually from Mongolia.
The historical record is disputed.
There is no historical record of sloths in Mongolia.
There would be if sloths were better at record keeping. We're not a documentation-oriented species.
This is the least Kaizen thing I've ever heard. We're not a documentation-oriented species is the opposite of standardized work.
Sloth Kaizen is different. It's about accepting the process exactly as it is, and calling that continuous improvement.
That's just napping with a Japanese vocabulary.
Yet, I'm very well rested.
I walked into that one too.
But seriously, personal Kaizen, have you tried it?
I have, actually. When I was still practicing medicine, I applied it to my patient intake process. I timed every step, found that I was spending way too long on administrative stuff and not enough on actual patient interaction. Rearranged the workflow, moved the paperwork to the end of the visit instead of the beginning, and suddenly I had an extra 7 minutes per patient for actual conversation. Made a huge difference in both my satisfaction and, I think, the quality of care.
7 minutes per patient is enormous.
And it came from just observing my own process for a week and being honest about where the time was going. Nobody taught me to do that. I just got curious about why my days felt rushed and started measuring.
The pediatrician was secretly a process engineer.
Every good clinician is, to some degree. Medicine is full of processes, diagnostic workflows, treatment protocols, handoff procedures. The ones who are thoughtful about those processes practice better medicine. The ones who just do what they were taught without questioning eventually drift into outdated or inefficient patterns.
That connects to something I've been thinking about. Kaizen seems to require a certain kind of person. Someone who's naturally curious about how things work, who notices friction, who's bothered by inefficiency. Are some people just temperamentally unsuited to this?
I think some people are more naturally inclined toward it, yes. But I also think the curiosity can be cultivated. The problem is that most workplaces actively discourage it. Schools discourage it. Color inside the lines, follow the instructions, don't ask why. By the time people enter the workforce, a lot of that natural curiosity has been trained out of them.
Implementing Kaizen is partly an unschooling process, teaching adults to notice things they've been trained to ignore.
That's a big part of it, and it's why the early stages of a Kaizen implementation often feel awkward and forced. People aren't used to being asked what they think. They're used to being told what to do. When you suddenly ask them to identify problems and suggest improvements, the first response is often suspicion. Is this a trap? Followed by blankness? I don't know. Everything seems fine.
Everything seems fine until you actually look at it.
Which is the entire philosophy in four words.
Let's talk about measurement for a bit. You mentioned earlier that tracking number of improvement suggestions is a trap. What should companies actually measure to know if Kaizen is working?
You need a mix of leading and lagging indicators. Lagging indicators are the outcomes you actually care about: defect rates, customer satisfaction, employee turnover, profitability. Those move slowly. Leading indicators are the things that predict those outcomes: how quickly problems are surfaced and resolved, how many processes have documented standards, how often standards are being followed versus ignored.
You're measuring the health of the improvement system itself, not just the results.
And one metric I particularly like is what some lean practitioners call time to Kaizen. How long does it take from when a problem is identified to when an improvement is implemented? In a healthy Kaizen culture, that time should be short. If problems sit on a backlog for months without action, the system is broken regardless of what the suggestion count says.
Time to Kaizen as the organizational equivalent of deployment frequency in software.
That's a good parallel. High-performing software teams deploy multiple times a day. High-performing Kaizen cultures implement small improvements constantly, sometimes multiple per week per team. The velocity of improvement becomes a competitive advantage in itself.
The flip side, if your time to Kaizen is measured in quarters, you're not doing Kaizen, you're doing annual planning with extra steps.
And this is where a lot of large organizations get stuck. They have the budgets and the executive sponsorship and the consultants, but the distance between someone notices a problem and someone with authority approves a change is so long that the energy dissipates. By the time the improvement is authorized, everyone's forgotten why it mattered.
The bureaucracy has heat death for continuous improvement.
That's almost poetic.
I have my moments, usually after napping.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1920s, Mongolian herdsmen noticed that bubbles trapped in permafrost ice acted as natural magnifying lenses, concentrating spring sunlight enough to melt tiny channels days before the surrounding ice thawed, an optical property of methane inclusions that wouldn't be formally studied by Western scientists for another 40 years.
Methane was doing macrophotography before macrophotography existed.
Nature's own lens flare.
That's our show. If you enjoyed this, do us a favor and leave a review wherever you listen. It helps people find us. This has been My Weird Prompts. I'm Korn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry. We'll catch you next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.